Welcome everyone to another episode of For the Love of Cinema. My name is Grayson Maxwell, and joining me as always...
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick Morris.
Nick Morris in the flesh. Well, not in the flesh, he's 400 miles away, but 400 miles away, he is indeed sitting there in the flesh.
I'm in audio waves right now.
Right now you're in audio wave? Nick, how you, it is now more than a week into December. How's things going for you, man?
You know what? Things are going pretty decent. Not a huge snowfall has gone, and it hasn't came either, so that's pretty good. Just a little bit of snow, not too bad. Christmas music is obviously taking over the radio waves like crazy, and it's driving me crazy, Grayson, ever since Thanksgiving.
You don't like Christmas music?
I do, man, I do, but, man. I can tell
every day. It can get a little old. Especially every store you walk in now is playing their Christmas carols. You know, every time you walk into a Hallmark store, like a Walmart or something, it's all playing Christmas music, all of it. I think, I haven't been to Walmart for a long time, but I assume they're playing Christmas music.
Oh, yeah.
So,
definitely.
You know what's interesting? Is it Halloween? Stores don't play scary music.
No, and you know what? I would be totally fine if every store had Monster Mash on repeat.
For like 2 weeks before Halloween?
Yeah.
Monster Mash?
This is Monster Mash, you know.
Yeah, man. Alright, so we got a good episode today. We have more James Cameron news, but not like you think. We have a movie getting another reboot from a few years ago and many years ago before that, and... one big director is taking over another franchise you'd never guess this director would ever have anything to do with. And we're going to talk about all that very soon. But first, let's jump into the box office. Now, Nick, Coco is number one. That's no surprise. It made $18 million over the weekend.
Good. I'm glad that movie is still going strong.
I am too. It's up to $389 million. That's not a small number. I'm glad it's doing well. I bet you this movie hits the $500 million mark, hopefully by Christmas, if not earlier than that.
Yeah. You said $389 million?
$389 million right now. That's not too lofty a goal to do $500 million in a week or two.
Yeah.
I'd like to hit it. Yeah, it's a damn good movie, though. Damn good. One of Pixar's best for sure. All right, what else we... Number two, Justice League, bringing in just shy of $10 million. No budget given.
That doesn't surprise me, Grayson. I thought that they'd fall a spot.
You thought what?
I thought Justice League would fall a spot.
You did? What did you think was going to push it off?
You know, I had high hopes for the Disaster Artist. Maybe it was a little too high. But, I don't know.
Nothing wrong with having high hopes for that. I didn't think that was going to be... Maybe in the weeks to come, that will certainly be a contender. But Justice League is too new, still doing great. But not now for almost... We're going on two and a half, almost 3 weeks. It's still $613 million. Not a bad number.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome.
Number three, Nick. You're never going to believe this. Still locked in number three this week. Wonder brought in just over $8 million. Number three, sitting pretty at $129 million. Not bad. Not bad at all for that little movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm glad that movie's making tons of money.
That's one of those hidden treasure movies.
I think so. Yeah. And number four, you just said it, Disaster Artist, making over $6 million this week, with a worldwide gross of just under $10 million. Not great,
ooh,
Nick.
Man.
Not great at all. But wow. It's not wide released yet. So it's not everywhere. So perhaps it's getting very good buzz. So I'm hoping that it does something else in the weeks to come. I love James Franco and I love his brother Dave Franco, and I love all their supporting casts. So
yeah, it was certainly a pretty good movie. I went to go see it, and it was sold out pretty soon.
Good for it, man. Good for what? Was it a big auditorium? Small auditorium? What?
It was a small auditorium. It was the Cinemark in Robinson, so they have those chairs that can lean back and give you massages. Probably not, but
there you go.
Yeah, And they were sold out the night before. And
really?
Wow,
good.
So this movie, you know, it's getting a lot of buzz, so that's good. A lot of people are going out and seeing it. Also good. But I walked up to the ticket lady. I asked, one for the disaster artist, ma'am. She's like, oh, we're sold out.
No.
And she must have seen the look of disappointment on my face because she then said, you could maybe have a wheelchair accessible seat. And you know what? I'm not ashamed, Grayson. I sat there.
Nick sat in the wheelchair seats. Not his idea. Nick, how was the movie from the wheelchair seat? Let me ask you that. How was the movie? From the coveted seats of the wheelchair seats.
It was nonstop fun, Grayson.
Nonstop fun. You heard it here, folks. We're going to dive into that one just a little bit later, but that is number 4 on the charts. And number 5, Thor Ragnarok falling one spot. All right, Nick. $180 million budget. Where do you think we're up to now?
Oh, man.
Well above 800. Well, not well above, just above 800 million.
Okay. 815 million.
833, not too bad. Not too far off.
My brain was telling me 830, but...
You'd have been closer.
Whatever.
You'd have been closer. That's making a killing. I really hope that the movie breaks the billion-dollar mark. It certainly deserves it.
I do too, man. That's fantastic. Love Thor Ragnarok. If you haven't seen it, go see it.
So Thor Ragnarok this week made $6.2 million. Daddy's Home made $6 million, just $200,000 less than Thor Ragnarok. Sitting at a $69 million budget, sitting at $142 million worldwide. I think they are super happy with that, I gotta say.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, you gotta be. I mean, well, you can be unhappy about it too, but... Fantastic movie. Funny.
It is a funny movie. I'll give him that. It is a pretty funny movie. I'm glad that movie's doing well.
What you expect this kind of comedy to make, I guess.
I think so. I think he's doing better than expected. I hope, and I hope that's because of Mel Gibson. I just like to hope for myself that it's because of Mel Gibson. But, you know. Murder on the Orient Express, number 7 this week, made just over $5 million. $55 million budget, sitting pretty at $274 million worldwide. That's a hell of a gross for a movie of that size budget. And it is deserving of that. It's a fun movie. Love the visual effects. Love the story, how it moves along. So it certainly deserves that.
Yeah. Can you tell us the difference between international and...
I can, next. Domestic... is 92. International is 182.
Oh, wow.
Almost $100 million more foreign than domestic. I mean, that's, like we say every week, that is to be expected with Murder on the Orient Express.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Glad the movie's doing well. Number 8 this week, The Star, sitting at a $20 million budget, $36 million worldwide. That made, that moved up. I'm glad it made more. It made another $4 million this week. I'm glad. It's a looks like it might move into the profitable region here very soon. I hope it's still in theaters for much longer. Another week or two, and that movie could really see some box office now that everyone's seen everything else they want to see, I'm sure, before Star Wars comes out and creates that entire just black void of nothing else getting any sales.
Oh, man.
And number 10, Just Getting Started, a movie we're going to look at next week. Morgan Freeman, Tommy Lee Jones, Rene Russo, they're making everyone smile. $22 million budget has brought in just a domestic total of $3 million. Not great. Not great, Nick. Not great. But it opens wider this week, so hopefully it'll get the attention it deserves. Some other notable ones up to 20. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is number 11. Number 12, Bad Moms Christmas. Number 13, Shape of Water. Not doing great. Roman J. Esquire, number 14, and The Mountain Between Us. That's creeping back up there, Nick, into number 18.
What?
That came out a while ago. It came out
in
October.
That's pretty fast.
Talk about that. And Jigsaw is number 20. Bring it up the rear again. Good for you, Jigsaw.
That's awesome.
All right.
Did we skip number 9, Grayson?
Did we skip number 9? I think I might be guilty of skipping number 9. So I apologize. Oh, Lady Bird. Lady Bird is number 9.
It
is... I'm sorry about that, folks. That's brought in $3.5 million, No budget given so far. Domestic total of $22 million. Not terrible. Nick, give us your overall impression before we dive into it later.
Oh, man.
If you had to sum up your experience in one sentence.
Ooh. That's a tough one. That's it. That's a tough one.
Okay, fair. Yep. We'll look at that later. All right, and to plan your movie-going experience, if you are planning to watch a movie the Friday after this episode is released on the 12th, no, I'm sorry, this past week, The Shape of Water got a little wider, just getting started in I, Tonya, and if you're planning to watch a movie on Friday after this episode airs on the 12th, we have Star Wars, The Last Jedi, huge release, Ferdinand and Gotti, and the week of the 20th to 22nd, Jumanji, The Greatest Showman, Pitch Perfect 3, Downsizing, Father Figure, December 25th, Phantom Thread, Molly's Game, January 5th, starting out the new year, Molly's Game goes a little wider, we have Insidious, The Last Key, January 12th, The Post, The Commuter, Proud Mary, and Paddington 2, and January 19th, coming to the end of January, 12 Strong, Forever My Girl, Den of Thieves. Now that just leaves 1 week to Star Wars, 2 weeks to Jumanji, Greatest Showman, super excited for that, Downsizing, 3 weeks to Phantom Thread, Molly's Game, 4 weeks to Insidious, The Last Key, and just 5 weeks to The Post and The Commuter, Liam Neeson kicking some butt. We all like to see that every now and again.
Oh, yeah.
Never a problem with that. And I'm proud to say James Cameron and Robert Rodriguez, who are bringing Alita Battle Angel, the first trailer is live. That is being adapted from Yukito Kishiro's Battle Angel Alita manga, and this is a pretty big deal. Anything James Cameron has his hand in is a pretty big deal. I remember seeing news as early as the early 2000s. I want to say 2003, 2004. It's been on and off again. It's gone through a couple of names. It was just James Cameron's Battle Angel, then it was Battle Angel, then it was the James Cameron Project. Now it has a real name. That's cool. Finally going to see it. The first trailer is live. Please check that out. Robert Rodriguez is directing, James Cameron producing with his partner, and you can never go wrong with that. You can never go wrong with that.
Oh, no, of course not.
It is. It's a cool trailer. It is looks like it's shot live action. But there's a
that was my next question.
There's a person in there that looks that it just seemingly like it. Well, they integrate this person seemingly into the film, and it looks like it's not digital, but it is CGI inserted character. So that's pretty cool. James Cameron is always looking to do cutting edge stuff in this industry. So and
it works.
Well, for him it does. I mean, for his audience it does. I mean, he has an enormous cult following. And just, I mean, it's for the same reason that, you know, Tarantino does, or Christopher Nolan has an enormous cult following. You know, Fincher does. Many directors have enormous cult followings these days. And so, Nick, we've been talking about Tarantino lately.
Yes.
So, more Tarantino in the news.
I know what you're going to say.
More Tarantino news. And now nothing has been set in stone yet. This is very fresh news. Nothing is set in stone. Nothing is confirmed. But he may be making the next Star Trek movie.
Whew.
What do you think about that?
Now, I'm gonna come back with you on this. Because, did you hear? I think he's planning to do it with someone else. J.J. Abrams. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, J.J. is definitely part of it, but... well, as of right now, Tarantino's looking to direct it.
Okay.
J.J. would produce it, I'm sure. But as of right now, that's some pretty cool news. Here's what I'm worried about. It's not exactly... They're not exactly as Tarantino likes to make movies. They're pretty tame compared to Tarantino movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
Obviously, nothing's set in stone, but I believe he wanted to make it rated R, which...
Again, I'm not sure I'm in complete agreeance with that decision.
Yeah.
There must be more to it, because he pitched an idea to both J.J. and Paramount, and they loved it and accepted it. So in order for them to say, okay, make this one R if the other ones were PG-13, there's got to be something there that we still, I mean, obviously we still don't know. It's very early in the development life cycle. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it will be, if Tarantino does end up making it, it will certainly be darker. It'll be, you know, boundary pushing like Tarantino always is. It just, I don't know, I'm worried about it not having the feel of a Star Trek movie.
Yeah, and that could definitely be overshadowed by what Tarantino does, I guess, is, and his style. Also, you know, it could go the other way. It could be fantastic.
Oh, it definitely could, and I'm not counting it out. My worry, of course, is that it won't be up to the same quality as the other movies. They're all pretty solid films, and it's I think it's because of JJ that they're as solid movies as they are. I mean, I'm not again. I'll admit to not being JJ Abrams' biggest fan. I was at a time. I thought he was going to change, and right before he did Mission Impossible 3, when that came out, I thought, this is it. This guy is going to rule the movie-making world here soon. Didn't exactly set things on fire, but he's a solid director that knows how to tell a story. I was very fortunate. I had a conversation with him on Super 8. He seems grounded. He loves movies in the basic form, and he wants to tell great stories with great characters. Now, that sounds like a very rehearsed response I would have gotten, but that's what he said, and I'm, you know, we were sitting down. He was in the production office, and I was able to sit down with him for a few minutes, and, you know, talk heroes, villains, talk Star Wars, talk where the at the time Super 8 was headed, and he, you know, he's a big light versus dark guy, you know, heroes and villains. So yeah. I mean, Star Trek is very clearly almost in that way. You know, there's a very clear hero, very clear villain. Like, it's not, and that's just seems to be his kind of thing, but. I don't know, Tarantino might be able to bring something new to the franchise. I'm not saying he won't or can't. I hope he does, because I do I do enjoy the Star Trek movies.
Well, Star Trek is, you know, Star Trek is just this crazy, vast, its own universe, you know? I know I would watch our professor in some of our cinema classes, our writing classes. He would show us Star Trek episodes of, I believe, of the first season, and he would, you know, because Star Trek is, it's everything that happens for a reason, and you can kind of tell where it's going because it leads you, you know, it's almost like someone's taking your hand and walking you through this simulation. I guess, but kind of stumbling over my words because I'm not too sure what to say, but Star Trek is just, you know, it's good. I do
like Star Trek. I was a little disappointed by letting Bruce Greenwood's character, the Captain, die in the second Star Trek movie, Star Trek Into Darkness, in 2013. I thought he was one of the best things. Well, no, I rephrase that. I think he was one of J.J.'s best assets in the original film, and won the 2009 reboot of Star Trek. I thought he was one of the things that held it together. For as strong as, excuse me, what's his face? Was this Captain Kirk? Who is Captain, what's his name? Why does his name escape me? The actor, Chris Pine. Yeah, I don't know. For as strong a Kirk as Chris Pine is, I thought Bruce Greenwood played a better captain who died in the original, who died in the second one. I thought he to me was kind of a necessary character, only because in JJ's Star Trek reboot, everyone is a kid. Everyone's so young and so headstrong, especially Kirk, who that's his character. Chris Pine played it beautifully, but he seemed to be the only adult. And when he died in the second one, I was like, why are you going to kill the only adult in this franchise? That may have been not the best choice, but I mean,
someone that seems like a voice of reason.
Yeah, that's kind of what Kirk needed. But so far we have Star Trek 2009, Star Trek Into Darkness 2013, dealt with Khan, Star Trek Beyond 2016, and this new Star Trek show, Star Trek Discovery, started this year, It goes back to, I haven't seen any of it, but I've heard it's actually quite good. It goes back to before Kirk and the Enterprise, events leading up to that. So I have talked to people who really do enjoy it, and for that reason, I'm looking forward to having more time when I get home to dig into that. But I'm looking for great things from those, and hopefully great things from, if it does come to fruition, the Tarantino Star Trek. Because that's, again, that's just, to me, it's like wrong director for the wrong movie. But if it works, he must have a reason he wants to do it. So, I mean, if it works, it works. So, moving on a little bit, trading gears a little bit. Now, Nick, did you get sucked into the global phenomenon that was Pokemon Go when it launched last year?
I did not.
Well,
and
you're one of the few. Know? You're one of the few that didn't.
Yeah, believe me, I had all my roommates were all down to play, and they were walking till at least 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, there's, I mean, a tremendously popular game, is doing very well. But how's that relate to movies, you might ask? Well, did Ryan Reynolds has just been cast in the movie Detective Pikachu, a live-action attempt at a Pokemon, which is going to be, if you ask, my initial reaction is, how in the world is this going to work?
Yeah.
But I'm sure they have figured it out, and I'm sure it will be nothing like anyone expects. Rob Letterman right now is set to direct. And, you know, Ryan Reynolds is on fire lately with Deadpool. I mean, people love Deadpool. People are very excited for the very anticipated sequel coming out soon. So, I mean, Ryan Reynolds seems like a good choice for that kind of quirky comedy slash detective kind of style.
Oh, yeah.
If that's what we're going to get. So, Ryan Reynolds, pretty good choice. He's in the upcoming Deadpool 2. Everyone look forward to that. I'm sure that will be awesome. People really seem to love the first one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so, man.
Yeah, I'm really excited for Deadpool 2. What's your take on Detective Pikachu, Nick?
You know, I think it's a cool idea because I think I'm not too keen on every Pokemon out there, but I know Detective Pikachu is like its own thing, I believe, like its own, I guess, spin-off Pikachu. But I think it's really cool. Ryan Reynolds is for something like this, I think he's a good choice. I hope so. I could just see his voice as Pikachu, but
I think he's gonna be. It's going to be a clash with Deadpool because it's going to be the opposite of Deadpool. It's going to be somewhat wholesome, kind of funny, kind of quirky, but not Deadpool cussing and sex and all that.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes. That's an interesting, very interesting news I wanted to bring up. It shows you how a mobile game can really just kind of set the world on fire for a little while and get a whole movie out of it. And I'm really excited about this one. Robin Hood, now you're asking me, God, another Robin Hood movie? They haven't gone anywhere. I know, they haven't gone anywhere. Very disappointed. No, I take that back. My favorite Robin Hood movie is probably the one from 1970, the Disney one from 1970-something, 1972 or something. I'm probably wrong about the date. But
the animated one?
Yeah, with the foxes. Yeah, Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love that movie?
I haven't seen that one in a long time.
But you may remember, some years ago, we had the Russell Crowe Robin Hood, which seemed like a match made in heaven. Russell Crowe as Robin Hood. You had the director. Who made Gladiator? Why is the name Gladiator? Oh, Ridley Scott directing it. You thought there's no way this movie could not just do amazingly. Cate Blanchett as Maid Marian, and you're thinking, my goodness, how can this movie not be great? And it didn't do anything, and I was very surprised. Only because they played up the whole Gladiator thing in Kingdom of Heaven. You know, like, look, this guy made these two movies, he's making another one, like, he's making another one in the Sword and the Sandals, you know. And they even, like, upplayed the whole, in the trailer, they show very clearly the sword throw, someone on the ground throws him a sword, like, comes straight from Gladiator, like, I mean, and it didn't do anything. It wasn't a bad movie, but it just, we never saw the sequel, and we never will now, because there's another movie with, there's another Robin Hood movie coming out, and it's got the same guy who was in, Taron Egerton, who is the Kingsman,
okay,
is going to be Robin Hood, and kind of out of date here, but it's going to premiere September 21st, 2018. Not the greatest time for a big, epic premiere like that. But, I mean, you're going into October, you're going into the holidays, so perhaps it'll have some longevity there. And it starts with Robin. He's introduced in the Crusades as a soldier for the crown. And I say, bring this up because hopefully your red flag went up and like, uh-oh, the Robin Hood movie, the 92 Kevin Costner Robin Hood movie. That's how it started. That's how it started. Red flag, red flag. Well, I'm sure, I hope they do not go down that route. But that movie was, The Prince of Thieves, boy oh boy, that is almost so bad it's laughable.
Yeah.
And Robin Hood is a great legend. I hope we get a good...
Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Yeah, that. Oh, there you go. There's a band. Yeah, there's that might be my favorite Robin Hood movie, The Men in Tights. That's a good Robin Hood movie. But it's a good legend. And, you know, same with the King Arthur. I know I spoke on briefly on the King Arthur legend last week or a week before. I do like these legends being brought to cinema. I don't like them not being the franchises that they deserve.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think what you're expecting when you hear of Robin Hood or, you know, any other movie like that, you're expecting an epic tale.
Well, you're expecting enormous. You're expecting grandeur. You're expecting huge production values. You know, epic story. You know, sword fights, and you're expecting these lavish set pieces and these wonderful, you know, rolling green hills and in the background for a love story. You're expecting all of this, and if it doesn't deliver, it doesn't deliver. So yeah. I mean, that's just why my thing is. Sometimes I shake my head. I remember watching I was beating the drum for Robin Hood, like, 3 months before it came out. I was hyped. You know, we got it a week early when I was at the movie theater I was working in 2009 or 2010. Sorry. We got it a week early. I was super excited. And then like, I just was shaking my head and I was like, man, how did you just not get it? I just don't understand. I'm just so disappointed. I own it on Blu-ray only because I found it for $1.
There you go. The bargain box.
The bargain box indeed. Now I do hope this upcoming Robin Hood movie is a good one that it gets franchised, because Robin Hood's one of those heroes that I think could the character could really benefit from a 2 or 3 movie franchise.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And Nick, there's no sugarcoating it. Big release coming out very soon. Star Wars.
Ooh.
The Last Jedi.
What's this Star Wars business?
What's this little known franchise? Well, unfortunately, I know that some of the people I've become good friends with here, they got it early at their theater and were going to watch it over the weekend. I did not join them. I had my family here with me, so I was unable to go watch Star Wars. But I know some people here in Chicago have already seen it, some movie theater employees. So I'm very jealous of them, extremely jealous of them, but...
I mean, Grayson, you know, family's awesome, and family will last forever, but...
It's not Star Wars.
Star Wars, man.
I totally get that, and I know they were really excited. I know my contact at the theater, he texted me, he's like, dude, it's awesome, you're gonna love it. I'm like, great, thank you.
Yes.
Hold me in suspense, please. Man, where to start with this? So this trailer, it's the trailer number 2. I love how it starts with Kylo Ren in the spotlight, Snoke kind of talking to him, kind of brainwashing him, kind of luring him over, solidifying him on the dark side. And then, you know, we see all kinds of scenes, and then a quote hit me, "Let the past die, kill it if you have to. That's the only way to become what you're meant to be." Kylo Ren says that. So hopefully in this movie we see him start to make the journey from being a Sith, if he is a Sith, to becoming over to, you know, the light, the Jedi. Hopefully, that starts to happen. But you never know. I mean,
I would enjoy that. I'm not gonna lie.
I think so.
I had high hopes. Last film that maybe, you know, he turned a page, but obviously that didn't happen.
No, but you know, we see John Boyega's character Finn with a lightsaber. Poe gives a pretty good speech. So, I mean, this movie, I'm sure, will be action-packed, much deserved. And then, of course, the last image, or the one of the last things in the trailer, number two, to me, in my mind, that is floating around is Kylo extending his hand to Rey when she asks what her role is in all this. Like, maybe there's some kind of redemption there that he's going to start, or even, you know, I'm really excited about that. I love stories continuing if they're great.
Yeah.
So,
Grayson, do you have any predictions? Do you have any fake spoilers or whatever you want to say about Star Wars?
My fake prediction, of course, is that Chewie is the Sith Lord we've all been looking for.
Oh, God.
And no one ever knew, no one ever thought to look under his Wookiee fur. And, you know, he's going to destroy everything. That's my prediction, that Chewie is the ultimate power in the universe. So.
I could imagine that happening.
Fair.
That is crazy.
I'm really excited about it. I wasn't too excited about episode 7. I was actually fairly disappointed and let down, I think, as were a lot of people. It wasn't as strong a comeback as they had hoped. But, I mean, people did enjoy it. It's still a pretty good movie, so I'm looking forward to the continuation of the Star Wars saga.
Mm-hmm.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, another huge deal, directed by J.A. Bayona. Bryce Dallas Howard, Chris Pratt, Jeff Goldblum, James Cromwell, Toby Jones. The returning cast all comes back. I know people will love Jurassic World, love Jurassic Park. The movie made, you know, I think it passed $1 billion mark. So, or if it didn't pass, it's very close. But it's you know, people love it. What do you think of the trailer? Which actually just debuted within the past couple of days.
Yeah. So. Listen. On Tuesday of last week, I saw a teaser for it. I'm sure everyone did. And then every day, it just became a new freaking teaser until Friday or Thursday, when I finally got to see the trailer. So it was fantastic. Most dinosaurs I've ever seen in Jurassic Park. And I think their quote is saying that a lot of crazy stuff. They're going back to the island. You know, they're trying to save some of these dinosaurs, man.
Wouldn't you? I mean, if you could save dinosaurs, wouldn't you want to save them?
Oh yeah, definitely. I don't know, man. It would certainly be interesting. There's one powerful image that has just burned in my mind, and that is when Chris Pratt's Owen goes up to the T-Rex, who's I guess, you know, in the back of a truck, you know, being detained, as a T-Rex should be. And he just gets up close to him, you know, puts his hand on there, kind of like in the original Jurassic Park when the Triceratops is down. And, you know, Owen's just putting his hand on him, and this T-Rex just opens his eyes. And man, oh man, it got me. It certainly got me.
I'm really excited to see what's become of that little one he was raising. I'm excited. I mean, there's a lot of cool things going on. And I tell you what, a couple of quotes kind of jumped out at me. As Jeff Goldblum's character Malcolm says, these characters were here before us, and if we're not careful, they're going to be here after. Which means,
yeah.
I mean, you're looking at someone. I mean, we're obviously facing, or at least they know that once they make it to, you cannot contain the dinosaurs. They will find a way. As akin to the theme of the original film, you know, life will find a way, as John says. And it's, even to take that quote even further, life cannot be contained, life breaks free, life finds a way. So I'm really excited we're sticking with the theme of the original Jurassic Park. And I hope that goes well for the film. I'm really excited to see some more trailers. I'm really excited to see the sequel to Jurassic World. I'll tell you what, super excited. And The Post by Steven Spielberg, not his first foray out with Tom Hanks. We have Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep, Sarah Paulson, Allison Brie, Bruce Greenwood, Bradley Whitford, and Katherine Graham with The Washington Post by Meryl Streep, and Ben Bradley is an editor, played by Tom Hanks, team up to expose a secret spanning decades and presidents. Secrets in this country are never... That's always been a thing. Secrets
of
America.
You're never reading the full story in the newspaper, folks.
No, never.
This trailer, it looks good. You got Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. So that's a duo that you don't want to miss. I think they are pretty powerful together. And this movie looks good. It looks damn good. It holds the essence or the key or, you know, a bigger idea of what freedom of speech is. And I'm excited to dive into that.
I hope people realize how much of a treat it is to see someone as good as Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Like, especially with someone he's made many movies with, Spielberg. I'm glad that it's a treat. It's a rare treat that we can, that we get Tom Hanks. And to me, I always look forward to Tom Hanks as in the, you know, it's sort of a, it's to me like you in the Green Mile when he sits down with John Coffey. After he's gone through his mind, he's talked to his friends, his wife, and he doesn't quite know what to do, given what John Coffey is a miracle, you know, in a time when there weren't a lot of miracles in the country. And he sits down, and I think this is absolutely a testament to Tom Hanks, but it's so, the scene that he sits down and asks John Coffey if he asks his character, do you want me to let you go? See how far you could get before they get you. And it's like that intense, like he knows his soul is in real trouble of being damned.
Yeah.
And he's trying to find a way to not let this miracle man be killed. And then when I saw Tom Hanks in Saving Mr. Banks is again when he sits down with Emma Watson's character and she sits down and says, I know who he is, you know, and you just like that. To me, that is Tom Hanks. Like, I love when he just sits down with people and just gives them the skinny, you know, like that's, to me, that's the greatest thing ever. And it's, you know, hopefully we get some of that in this movie. That's one of his strengths is he is, when he's on screen, you know, Tom Hanks is on screen.
He commands it. Yeah.
Yeah. He owns it. Like that he is, you know, so I'm really looking forward to The Post. I think it's going to be a hell of a movie. I mean, if it's Spielberg and Tom Hanks, chances are it's going to be up for nomination, you know.
Yeah, definitely, man.
All right, and jumping right into the reviews, we had a chance to see a couple movies this week. We'll start with Roman J. Israel, Esquire. Now, as I understand, Nick, you did not have a chance to see Roman J. Israel, right?
I did not.
All right.
Denzel, though.
Yeah, oh, man. Denzel, jeez. Then talking about Denzel behind Tom Hanks is just... is in no way a, you know, telling you where they stand with each other, but it's just, man, great actor and great actor. Just, boy, Denzel kills it. And Roman J. Israel Esquire, an idealistic old-fashioned attorney finds himself in, excuse me, he finds himself in an ordeal when his partner dies and he has to take over the responsibility of his small firm. He then merges with another of a bigger firm and gets himself into legal trouble, which turns into a real crisis. Right off the bat, Roman J. Israel, Denzel Washington, Colin Farrell, Carmen Ejago, they are some of the cast in this very, very good movie by Dan Gilroy. He's an idealistic attorney. He kind of is in an age that is no longer there. Like the civil rights movement.
He's losing his mind, in a way.
He's not losing him. He's very old fashioned in the way that he just, he doesn't, he wants to live in an era he wants to live in.
Yeah.
You know, he's not really, he's kind of a fish out of water in the era he's in. You know, he just, he wants things to be right when, you know, there's so much corrupt around him. What I love about Israel Esquire, and I'm going to start this new thing. Every time we talk about a movie, we're gonna list three things we liked about it. And the reason for this is because when I was growing up, I was so hypocritical on movies, not hypocritical, so critical on movies that I was always so negative. If the movie was just, okay, I'd be like, no, bad. It doesn't deserve to be among the greats. And so my friend who I worked with in the movie theater, even when we were 16, he's like, give me three things you like about it. I don't care. If you hate the movie, give me three things you like. Dig deep, find them. So, like, using that. And then I had a professor in school who always made us list seven things we liked about a movie. And any film we talked about, liked it or hated, we had to list seven things we loved about it. And it's like, so it's really hard to find some things. But not that this one's easy. But to start off, Denzel Washington. It's a treat to see this man. He is the character of Roman J. Israel. He's so good. It's kind of scary to watch him do it. I know there's a scene where someone's asking him a question. He really doesn't know how to respond. It's just the camera just stays on him, and it's like you feel it. Like you feel you feel the vibes coming around. It's great.
That's what I love about Denzel. Much like Tom Hanks, he commands the screen. You know. And even when he's not saying anything, he's saying something.
That's very well put. You know, he's presence on screen. Like he has the gravitas that, you know, a triple A Hollywood star needs to have, and he definitely has it. The second thing, I love the trigger point in this movie. The jumping off point is, it thrusts him into a world that he is very unfamiliar with now, having to do everything and trying to be kind of being recruited by this other law firm by Colin Farrell, who plays George Pierce, who Roman J. Israel ends up working for after his partner is in the hospital and unable to continue his firm. Their firm gets shut down. He gets kind of gobbled up into another one. And working on a few cases, the story of this film is he uses information he knows to get the reward, and then that catches up to him. And like then he has to kind of backtrack and figure out how to get himself clear of this. But it's Dan Gilroy, who also did Nightcrawler. If you remember, did you ever see Nightcrawler?
Oh yeah,
with Jake Gyllenhaal. That's also one of those movies. That's kind of a disturbing movie if you think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Incredibly disturbing.
More than that.
But the main character, Jake Gyllenhaal's character, Nightcrawler, and Roman J. Israel, they're so strong, you know, by very good male leads. Jake Gyllenhaal obviously is no Denzel yet, but I mean, Denzel's also got like 20 years on him. So. And of course, the third thing is redemption. This movie handles it very well. I don't want to tell you how. I don't want to ruin the ending, but it's one of those endings. If you can watch this ending without sitting up, like at the edge of your seat, I would be surprised. I really would be surprised. One of the strengths.
The movie is pointing always towards something, for Roman Israel. That's good. I don't know. I can see Denzel, you know, picking up a 45 and just ending the problems, you know, making that his situation. But no, did you enjoy it? What were a couple things you didn't like about it?
Something that I didn't like about it. Sometimes the camera work can be a little jarring.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's super close and it just, at the time I do really enjoy that. I don't enjoy it when it's not the style of the entire, like, if it's going to be, some of it's going to be shoot like close shots, super close, I prefer most of it to be intimate, close like that. Just, that was kind of, there was a couple times that I guess the chosen angles weren't ones I would have chosen, and that kind of took me out of the moment.
Yeah.
I guess something along that. Another thing I didn't like was kind of placing the entire emphasis on Denzel's character.
Yeah.
you didn't. I mean, Colin Farrell is not bad. It just didn't seem like the story, the dialogue went in a place that allowed Colin Farrell to like excel on screen. It'd be like he's not a nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Colin Farrell, he's not an A-lister by any means, but he's not bad at what he does. He's been in some bad movies, but he's not bad at what he does.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really enjoy. I think I like more things in this movie than I dislike. So mm-hmm. that's always a plus. That's always a plus. Roman J. Esquire, 100%. If you have a chance to see this movie, I know it's a couple weeks old. If you haven't seen it yet, hop into movie theater, see it. You will not be disappointed. You never are with a Denzel movie. Never.
Yeah. Very true.
So there's that. It's set in modern LA, modern day LA. But like I said, Roman J is real. Denzel's character, he's a fossil from another time. So there's that theme. It just he's kind of an outdated. He's almost like a knight that's in a time when virtue isn't really a thing anymore.
You know, yeah, virtue, he's trying to live in a civilization that is.
And he's trying to live in an idealistic world, which he's reminded again and again isn't a thing.
Yeah. And that's some powerful stuff right there.
I think so. No. So, Nick, tell us about Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, man. This movie was goddamn fantastic, Grayson.
Goddamn fantastic.
It's, you know, it's set in the early 2000s, an artistically inclined 17-year-old girl. You know, she's coming of age. She's learning what life is through trials and tribulations. You know, so we got Christine McPherson, also known as Lady Bird, played by
Saoirse Ronan.
Yes, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I cannot do that. We got Laurie Metcalf, plays Marion McPherson, her mother, and then Tracy Letts, Larry McPherson, and Jordan Rodriguez. Playing Miguel McPherson. And that's basically the whole family. And then there's Miguel's girlfriend, Shelley. But we don't talk about her. Greta Gerwig directed, you know, she wrote it. Essentially, it was kind of a semi-biographical tale from her. And I gotta say, this movie touched me. Greta Gerwig said in an interview that she would have preferred the film to be just close-ups of Saoirse Ronan's face because of her immense beauty. And I'm not gonna lie, beautiful woman.
She still got it.
She got it. I've never seen her before, but whatever it is, she got. There's a lot of good things about this movie. There's beautiful shots of Sacramento. First 5 minutes of the movie, it's, you know, her mother, let me paint you a picture. Christine, Lady Bird, we'll call her Lady Bird because that's essentially what it is. One quote I found fantastic from the film was, you know, when someone asked her, what's Lady Bird? You know, and she's like, it's my name. It was given to me by me, you know, kind of this teenage angst that we're seeing, this fire in her soul. But first 5 minutes of the movie, her mother and her are coming back from a college road trip, you know, college visit, and they start fighting after they finish a book on tape. And, you know, they start fighting, and then Lady Bird just jumps out of the car. And it's, you know, they're going... I don't think they're on a highway. They're probably on some back road. But she just jumps out of the car, breaks her arm. And that sets the tone for this whole movie. It was, I don't know, man. It was about an adolescent girl in her senior year. You know, she's learning. She has a couple boyfriends. And they all pan out in different ways. And in this movie, it dives into a relationship between her parents, and it felt very real. you know, it hit me in my heart. We saw struggles with with money and how it impacted the parents, and how Lady Bird didn't really understand because, you know, she's just a teen, you know, living her senior year, trying to make friends, trying to keep friends, but trying to learn who she really is.
So, like, if someone's asking you, "Hey, is this movie worth the $15 ticket price?" What do you tell them? And give me three things you like about it.
Well, yeah, I would definitely say go see this movie. I'm gonna say three things I felt good about or really enjoyed. There were parts in this movie where it kind of, let me see here, let me catch myself real quick. Throughout this movie, we see a bunch of houses, and Lady Bird reflects on each one of them, and I thought that was really great because, in a sense, it's her dream world, but, you know, maybe it's an unattainable goal for right now, at least. So it felt very real. The realism in this movie was good. At times it felt as if the it was Greta. I don't know what she did, but I don't know if she had her own director of photography, but it was very good. I liked the setting. And there was a lot of B-roll of Sacramento I thought was beautiful.
There you go. Okay. So you like the cinematography?
Yeah.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Did I say I want to say the relationship between the parents and Lady Bird. And overall, Lady Bird's story, man, this whole movie was just, I mean, it was great. It was great. So I can say, I always thought of Lady Bird as a doll that Hank Hill owned. But Grayson, now I will think of this film.
There you go.
This is taking over Lady Bird for me.
It's taking over Lady. Now when someone's Lady Bird, he thinks of the movie, not the doll. Good.
But people, don't sleep on this movie because I was wondering what the hell it was, and I'm glad I watched it because it really was good. There's this one part where they're in this play, and the original director of it couldn't be there, or he was sick or something, and the JV football coach is trying to get everyone in this play. He's trying to do blocking for some scenes, and it's just it's a hoot. Don't sleep on this movie. Go see it. It's already been out in theaters. If you haven't seen it already, go check it out.
Go check it out. Lady Bird. All right. He says watch it, then you should watch it. And that brings us to The Shape of Water. I know a lot of people were talking about this movie. Fantastic, Nick. If you're wondering, oh my goodness. I hope this is up for some awards. I can see it winning. I can see it winning quite a few things, actually, but in 1960, a mute janitor meets and forms a very unusual bond with a water creature that's being kept in a U.S. military base. This was Guillermo del Toro. This is one of his finest works, in my opinion. And I love Pan's Labyrinth. I love Hellboy, the second Hellboy movie. I love the second Blade movie. I mean, most of his. This is a prime example of what he does very well. It kind of has that fairy tale feel, the comic booky feel. That's kind of the realm that he loves to kind of what could be real, what isn't, but like what it, I mean, he operates well within those lines.
Yeah.
Right off the bat,
the lines between reality and what could be.
This creature, in case you've seen the trailer, is very much like the creature from the Black Lagoon. It almost looks like Abe from Hellboy. A lot of people are saying this is Abe. This is the... I've heard the theory that this is the origin of Abe as well. I don't know how true that is, but as far as in Guillermo's mind, but you know, there are some fan theories out there. So I mean, there's always that if you know, I mean, that stuff's cool. It may not be true, but like, it's cool to think of it as, you know what? I want that to be Abe from Hellboy. So it's Abe. Like, if you want it to be, then it is. You know, it's just however you want to do it. But three things right off the bat. I love Guillermo's fairy tale way of telling a story. I think it's just, he's like a man. To me, he just kind of, he makes what he wants to make. You know, like, it doesn't matter what anyone else, like, he's like, nope, I'm going to do it this way. And I feel like if there's a prolonged argument between him and the studio, he wins.
Mm-hmm.
He just...
I mean, he's an artist, man. That's... He has a vision.
He really does see things in a different way, and that's what I love about his films. It's like, that's what I love about a Guillermo del Toro movie, is it's just, you kind of have an idea what you're going into, but not really. And that's... I love the unpredictability, almost. So... And the... As the title suggests, The Shape of Water, there's a parallel there. It moves into The Shape of Water. As you can tell from the trailer, a big theme here is relationships, love. You know, finding that true love and what you're willing to do for it. From the trailer, you see that they do create. They do create between themselves the girl Elsa and the. And the monster, who's just called the Asset, is they do form a bond. They understand each other. She can't talk, and he can't really communicate, but they understand through items, through object, and through sign language, are able to really connect. And we find that they are really compatible in more in more than just one way. It's just, it really is a love story and a fairy tale in that way. It does. You could call it, you know, a love story almost. You could, I mean, people aren't, but you could if you, and you wouldn't be wrong about it.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be wrong. Now, I think. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Nick.
How was? I don't want to, you know, make you trip over where you're going and where you're at, but how was Michael Shannon?
Oh, I always love Michael Shannon. He's he just.
Me too.
I love him as the villain too. Like, it's almost more because it's almost more fun to have him as the villain than I think is not the villain. I loved him in Premium Rush. He's just like, he's so annoying that like, but he's so like, he's also like, I keep saying like, he's also very kind of menacing.
Yeah, it's.
And he does it so well. He does it so well. He looks angry all the time. And it works so very well for him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm moving into. I love the cast. I love Richard Jenkins always. Octavia Spencer she is great. I mean, recently she was in this. She was in Gifted, The Shack. Now, The Shack may have not been a great movie, but she was good in it. So as always, you can walk away from that. But I also want to, Sally Hawkins. Whoa. Man, oh man. That's the performance to beat this year, is Sally Hawkins is in as... Alisa Esposito in The Shape of Water. That's the performance to beat. She never says anything, but she has this... I mean, she doesn't speak. She's mute, but she is able to communicate via sign language. But her silent... In her silence, she says so much. You know, it's quite wonderful. 1960s Baltimore. She is a cleaner, just like the information you get from the trailer. She is a cleaner, and she... They are torturing this poor thing, and she's able to form a bond with it. And that's kind of how we start with, she's looking for something more in a partner than just being married to be married to someone or not loving the person you're with. She's looking for more. You know, she wakes up, she enjoys herself in the bathtub, she goes to work, she works all day along her co-worker Zelda Fuller by Octavia Spencer. The other, her partner, janitor, or maid, and Michael Shannon's character early on is seen being very mean to the asset, and
mm-hmm.
he opens They're mopping the floor, and then you see that you hear the door open behind him, and they look, and he comes out. Two of his fingers have been bitten off, and then they're asked to go in there to clean, and then that's when she makes contact with this thing, and that's kind of how she starts to understand him a little bit. Is, you know, that's what I think is a strength here, is Guillermo's like almost a chance meeting with these two, but just develops into something so much more.
Yeah.
And it does.
Oh, man.
What I love is the, I'm not gonna say the last line. The last line of the movie surely sums up the last, you know, 20 minutes of sacrifice that our characters go through here, and there's a very direct theme, or parallel between love and water. You know, water is always, it's always liquid, it's always moving, it's never formed. But so is love. You know, it's different. It's not what you expect to find sometimes. It's just, so, I cannot give this movie a higher recommendation. If this movie is available where you are, please do yourself a favor, watch it. Just sit back in your chair for 2 hours, kind of forget the world, zone out, and just get lost in this wonderfully told Guillermo story. You will not be disappointed. Not at all. So.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick, what about The Disaster Artist?
Ooh, The Disaster Artist, man. Like I said, it was sold out, but I got a wheelchair accessible seat. This woman walked out. She was also in a wheelchair accessible seat. She walked out not even 10 minutes in. And gotta say, I don't know what was wrong with her. Maybe she had some issues. Maybe it was maybe something happened. I don't know. But she missed a great film. She did. It's pretty good. It's very funny.
There's a lot of people in that movie. Give me three things you loved about it, real quick.
Well, one, James Franco is unbelievable. Unbelievable as Tommy Wiseau. I don't know how he did it, but he seemed like, it seemed like Tommy Wiseau was playing a better version of himself. And, so I definitely like that. The storytelling of what goes into a movie and how it makes, how one becomes made. Just the overall, basically mockumentary feel of it. I'm always a huge fan of that. And last but not least, the wonder of who the hell Tommy Wiseau is. And that was a recurring thing throughout the movie and throughout Tommy Wiseau's life. But I don't know, man. Really good. Really good.
So, and I understand there's another movie that exists, The Room, about Tommy Wiseau, right? What was the connection in Disaster Artist about The Room? Or they're making The Room, right, in this movie?
Yeah, exactly. It's so what happens is we start out in an acting class, and we got Greg Sestero, played by Dave Franco. He's doing his little spiel on stage. Good, not great. It ends. Then teacher's like, who wants to go next? You know, we get the back shot of some long-haired man. I go, gets up, walks on stage, does this completely crazy, weird, dramatic chair-throwing scene, and he walks off. And then that's basically Greg Sestero, Dave Franco, walks up to Tommy Wiseau and says, hey, can we do a scene together? You want to go see with me? Okay, whatever. That's how they hit it off. You know, then they move to Los Angeles, and they're not really finding work. Greg Sestero's finding some work. Obviously, Tommy's getting a little jealous. You know, Greg's finding some women. You know, he's having a good time. They're still friends, but the success is not coming at a rate of at which they like. So they decide to make their own movie. The Room, which me personally, I've never seen The Room. And you didn't have to enjoy this movie. Have you ever seen The Room?
I have not. I've heard about it.
Yes. Apparently it has a huge cult following, which is explained throughout this movie. But yeah, it's The Disaster Artist is basically a mockumentary about Tommy Wiseau making The Room. And I gotta say, man, being on that production must have been one tough fucking job, because, you know, it's shown throughout the movie where there's, you know, there's maybe no water on set, or it's 100 degrees on set. You know, what's going on here, Tommy? You know, one, where's he getting the money? Who is he? He doesn't sound like he's from New Orleans. But no, man, this movie was fantastic. Excuse me, sorry.
So you obviously recommend it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's, you know, story of a mystery man. You know, it's based off old classic The Room. I can say this movie was more than I bargained for. It was hilarious and at times made me wonder things like, who is Tommy Wiseau? Which it's not answered in the movie. Was Greg Sestero a good actor, but is he haunted by The Room? Is this movie bad or is it good? You know, The Room, meaning. I don't actually know. There are so many questions and a little time to talk about The Room, but I think The Disaster Artist sums it up pretty well, especially the relationship between the two main characters, who are represented by the brothers, James and Dave Franco. I truly can't see it any other way, especially with James Franco, who takes the role by the reins and doesn't let go. So like I said, this is an incredible mockumentary about a movie that is so bad, or so good it's bad, or so bad it's good.
So bad it's good, I think is the phrase, yeah.
The Disaster Artist, man, I give it 2 high marks and 1, Lisa, you're tearing me apart.
Fair. Now, he made this, he directed this, Franco did, James Franco.
Yes.
He's actually, he's becoming quite the force in Hollywood.
Dude,
from what I understand, he's getting bigger and bigger projects coming lined up, too.
To direct himself, correct?
I do believe one of them, yes, but he's someone that is just on the up and up right now, so.
I've always been a fan of him, of his work, and anytime him and Seth Rogen are at all, you know, working together, they make movie magic, you know?
Yeah.
And Dave Franco, man. Dave and James Franco, I wish I was part of their family. For God's sakes, adopt me.
Please adopt Nick Morris.
No, they are just, they're a hoot, you know? This film got me wondering, though, you know, obviously, who the hell is Tommy Wiseau? But it also made me wonder, was Greg Sestero a decent actor? And did The Room mess up his whole career? I don't know. It's just, it's something that when you see the movie, you ask yourself, but God, duh, who is Tommy Wiseau, man? I want to know. And I've watched a couple interviews with him before I saw The Disaster Artist. Strange man, and I don't know if he changed himself to play the part in The Room. But he, you know, it's weird because he wrote and obviously directed The Room and starred in it. It was definitely weird. But The Disaster Artist takes a couple scenes from The Room and they recreate them, obviously, because they have to. There's no difference that I could tell between Tommy Wiseau and James Franco playing Tommy Wiseau.
That is awesome. One question I do have to tell you, I do have to ask you is the main character a vampire or isn't he?
You know what? That's highly debated, and
is it really?
You're gonna have to watch the film.
Is it really highly debated? I was just going off that one line from the trailer. It's like he's got good looks, has it all, has good looks, has friends, also maybe vampire, but
also maybe vampire. I don't think he is, but you never know.
You never know.
He could very well be a vampire.
All right, we covered four movies pretty quickly. All of which I think were pretty good choices. I mean, for me, the choice of the week, and I did not see Lady Bird or Disaster Artist, but the choice of the week I think has to be the Shape of Water.
Mm-hmm.
At least for my the two movies I watched, Roman J. Israel and The Shape of Water, I think it has to be Shape of Water. Now the two movies you watched, Lady Bird and A Disaster Artist, which one of those two do you think was your pick?
It's a toss up. And as much as I want to say Lady Bird because it surprised me how good it was, I'm just going to go with The Disaster Artist because I did enjoy it a lot more than I did Lady Bird.
Fair enough. I can jive with that. Now, the Clark Hayes is a movie you should probably watch. I took directly out of the Del Toro camp and Hellboy. 2004. I went back and forth, Hellboy or Pan's Labyrinth, and I tell you what, I'm gonna have. There's other opportunities to put Pan's Labyrinth on the list.
Yeah.
And I don't want to, but I won't have as many opportunities, especially with the Hellboy reboot coming out. That I want to put Hellboy on the list. 2004, Guillermo del Toro, Ron Perlman, John Hurt, Selma Blair, Jeffrey Tambor, Rupert Evans. Hellboy, in 1944, is called forth and rescued from the Nazis and becomes a defender against the forces of darkness. And he must, when we pick up with the film, he must stop Rasputin as he attempts to reopen the dark portal and bring forth other evils into the world. This is Del Toro. This is probably when Del Toro first got on the map with a lot of people, only because it was a pretty big movie. And after Hellboy, I think Guillermo became a household name, and everyone knew who he was and what he'd made.
Yeah.
Now, I love his way of telling stories. As I said before, like I love that fairy tale and comic book elements. That's the first reason. Second reason, I love Ron Perlman as Hellboy. I was not okay with the reboot because who is going to do it better than Ron Perlman?
I don't know, man.
That's my question: is can this guy do a better job than Ron Perlman? I mean, we don't know. I mean, you're looking at another, you know, I want to say Heath Ledger and the Joker. Like, Heath was a damn good Joker. I don't know anyone. Mm-hmm. I don't think there are many people who would disagree with he was probably the best Joker as far as menacing and character. But, I mean, it's, how do you get to, you know, do that? But I love him as Hellboy, and I love Guillermo's direction. It's not the best superhero film, but I've never really thought of it as a superhero film. It's kind of a comic book movie. I've just thought of it as like a darker fairy tale. That's kind of how I see all of his movies. It's like a dark fairy tale. Go ahead, sorry.
It's been 13 years, Grayson. 13 years since it came out, man.
Well, we're never getting another one. I mean, it's being rebooted, so that's unfortunate. But I mean, we did get a sequel, but we're never getting a sequel to The Golden Army. So...
Mm-hmm.
We are officially done with Guillermo's Hellboy, and as far as being in the canon, the third one is the quotes is the through the film, John Myers played by Rupert Evans is kind of has a thing for Selma Blair's character, and so does Hellboy, and they're both kind of, you know, like playground fighting over her, like he does this for her, and then Hellboy does this for her, and they're trying to win her affection. And in the end, as he's watching her make her choice, we get this wonderful quote by Rupert Evans' character: "What makes a man a man? A friend of mine once wondered. Is it his origins, the way he comes to life? I don't think so. It's the choices he makes, not how he starts things, but how he decides to end them." And I've always thought that was an incredibly powerful quote for being, you know, for almost a hero. Because a hero, decisions are what make the hero great. Like, so that's what I love about that quote. And, of course, the very stylized the death of the professor when he's killed. It's you know, walking slowly in the rain, a bunch of suits carrying a casket. It's so well done. I love that moment. I sometimes just turn it on and go to that moment, watch it, and then walk away. I love stylized moments like that. So Hellboy I love Guillermo's movies and I love Hellboy. So I hope those of you who have not seen Hellboy, if you haven't, check it out. I know you can get it for pretty cheap. I know you can get when a DVD came out, there was a 3-disc box set, but it has all kinds of cool special features on it. You know, that you get to watch them dress up Perlman as Hellboy and like get to watch them take it off and how long that takes. And that's always awesome to see, man, if you love films. So by all means, check that out.
Yes.
Now, as always, we can be found on Apple iTunes. You can set your device to download directly from there, so it's ready for you every Tuesday morning. We can be found on Google Play for Android users. You can check out the Facebook page, which has recently been changed, but I'm going to make another one for Love of Cinema. Check out the Facebook page. It's been changed to Cinema Demore. By all means, check it out. Great content. You'll love them. Also, check out the Twitter page. I'm going to be starting sending out tons of tweets here soon. You guys can be reached at Grayson Maxwell 1. Nick, where can you be reached?
Enmore 1776.
He loves America, everybody. He is a patriot. And we thank you very much for listening to this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed some of those movies. There's a lot of really heavy movies there. I hope you enjoyed some of them. Or I hope you enjoyed, if you will watch them, I hope you enjoyed all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good evening. Thank you.
Get to it, folks.